Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachas Daf Chof Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a Mark Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur, we had learned on Daf Chof Amud Aleph a brisa that mentioned that Eitzim are called a korban, that the term korban is appropriate for wood, for the wood that's brought to the Beis HaMikdash for use on the Mizbeach, on the altar, and that the wood does not require being salted. The idea of salting is something that accompanies many korbanos, including menachos. And the wood that is referred to as a korban, mincha, the brisa there taught, does not require salting. We had then discussed that which Tana calls wood by the term korban. We determined that was the Tana Rebbe. The problem is that Rebbe holds that wood does need salting, that when one brings a dedication of wood, which is called a korban etzim, it requires salting. So the brisa that indicated that the wood is a korban and yet does not need salting presented a problem. The most recent point that we saw regarding that issue was at the top of Chof Aleph, our Gemara, the top of our Daf. And we said, take out wood. Wood is then not part of the discussion of that brisa. And insert nesochim, the accompanying wine that comes with korbanos. The nesochim, wine offerings, do not need to be salted. That even though nesochim are called korban, nevertheless they do not need being salted. And we cited a brisa that you can see at the very top of Daf Chof Aleph, and it mentions a list of items that do not need salting. Included in the list was yayin, which is dot underlined, as that was the main point for the discussion up till this point. And it also mentions that Eitzim and Keturis don't need salting either. At this point, the Gemara continues with the back and forth structure that we had started on Daf Chof Amud Beis. On the second line, second to last word of the line, you notice the word money with a trapezoid around it, a volcano form with the narrow part facing up. This is a continuation of questions. Following line, you'll see the inverted shape, the same shape inverted, that will represent a response. And as we mentioned in our previous year, this back and forth discussion continues. At this point, though, the Gemara is interested in knowing who is the author of this source at the very top. Money. E, Rebbe, the Gemara asks, if it's Rebbe, Kasha Eitzim. Eitzim does not match the representation in this source of wood, in which it says there is no salting for that, does not conform to Rebbe. Therefore, Kasha Eitzim. Eitzim would represent a difficulty if we try to ascribe authorship of this source to Rebbe, because Rebbe holds that Eitzim does need salting. E. Rabbonon, Kasha Keturis. If this source were according to the Chachomim, to the Rabbonon, Keturis would be a problem, because the Rabbonon hold that Keturis needs salting. And Rashi points that out, that that information was really alluded to on Daf Chof Amud Aleph, that the rule there stated anything that has another item coming as an obligation for it, in this case the Keturis, the incense, has wood that is brought for it, that kind of item requires salting. Therefore, the source at the top can't be the Rabbanan either, because the source here, the second line from the top, where we have dashed, underlined, Keturas as well, you can see it says it does not. The Keturas does not need salting. The Rabbanan hold it does. The Gemara answers, Hi, Tanahu. The source at the top will conform to the following Tanaic source, Desanya. In this source, we might as well point out at the end, you can see there are three underlinings, and they appear in a diagonal right descending form. And they're numbered 1, 2, and 3. See Yotsu, and a second time, and a third time. At that point, the source will say that we are coming to exclude wood, blood and wine, and Ktoris. Desanya, Rabbi Shmuel beno Sherab Yochanan ben Broka Oimer, Mahaprat, the detail of the Pasuk that spoke about salting. It mentioned in that Pasuk, this is what we had discussed on Daf Chof, the word minchoscha appears, the meal offering. So the nature of that which needs salting is dovar hamakabel tuma, something that's capable of receiving impurity, just like the meal offering. Number two, v'ululishim, and is put on the fire. And three, v'yeshno al mizbeach hachitzon, and is something offered on the external courtyard altar, as opposed to the golden altar in the Heichal. That those three points are characteristic of the Mincha. What else will need salting? Af kol, so to anything else. Kol dovar hamekabel tuma ve'oyla le'ishim v'yeshno al mizbeach hachitzon. So to anything else that has those three characteristics. Yotsu Eitzim, well, by establishing these as our standard for that which requires salting, we can exclude wood, She'ein Mekabla Tuma. Wood is a substance that, in and of itself, if it's not formed into a vessel, on a Torah level, is not Mekabla Tuma. It doesn't absorb Tuma, so it's not like a Mincha. Yotsu Dam, we can exclude by our aforementioned standards, Dam V'yayin, blood and wine, she'ein oilim le'ishim. Blood is applied to the mizbeach, to the sides of the mizbeach. The wine is poured down a tube on the top of the mizbeach. It doesn't go into the fire. Yotsu k'teres, she'eino al mizbeach achitzon. We can exclude the incense, that though it goes into the fire, it doesn't go into the fire of the external mizbeach, but rather to the golden altar inside the heichal. The Gemara raises a question. Ella, at this point, the Gemara now is going to focus on blood. The drasha we just learned and indicates that blood does not need salting by virtue of the fact that it's not like a mincha. Mincha goes into the fire, blood does not go into the fire. The question itself that we have is a long question. You can see that it's indicated by a long question marking. To the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line, indicating that all the following lines of Gemara form the question. A large part of it, however, you'll see is in a brackets. The brackets that we will encounter are not for skipping purposes, but rather to show that up till the brackets, the main question is raised. Within the brackets that will follow, there is the basis for the question. The topic that we have assigned, topic heading we've assigned to this Gemara, is indicated in the outside margin under the Nosei heading, Nosei topic heading, Dam Shemolchoi V'Dam Shebishloi, blood that's salted or cooked. If one eats that, even though there's a very strict Torah prohibition against eating blood, nevertheless, if it's been salted or cooked, eino over alov mishum dam, the Torah violation of eating dam does not apply. Turning now to the Gemara, we mentioned that the dam will not require salting by virtue of the Gzeres HaKosuv. Elo taimo demate kro ledam. The reason that the blood will not need salting is that it's been excluded by virtue of the Pasuk Me'al Minchoscha, which we darshin volo Me'al Dimcha. We mentioned that on Dav Chofom and Aleph, and we alluded to this, to the exclusion of blood just now in the previous Brisa with Rabbi Shmuel ben Osho, Rabbi Yochanan Broka, that mentions that dam doesn't match minchoscha in its characteristics. Ha lav hachi, if not for this scriptural exclusion by the that we mentioned just now, have amino dam liboi melach, would you have thought that the dam requires salting? Well, but kivan de malche nafik le mitoras dam. Once it's subjected to salting, it loses its identity as blood. So, how in the world, or why would you say that you need a pasuk to exclude blood from salting when, if at salting, if upon salting, it's no longer identified as dam? What we mean to say, therefore, is that even without the scriptural reference, on my own, I would understand that once you salt it, it's no longer the item that you thought it was in the first place. The Omar Ziri, Omar Rabbi Chanina, and as we've mentioned before, this section of Gemara simply provides the background for the point we just made. There are three points that are made in this bracket of section, only the second of which is directly relevant to our discussion. Ziri, in the name of Rabbi Chanina, says, Dam shebishloi eino over olav. Blood that's cooked. One is not in violation of the prohibition of eating blood, because once it's cooked, it loses its blood identity. Verav Yehuda Omar Ziri, Dam shemolchoi eino over olav. Notice with the markings, we've emphasized with a dashed underline Dam shemolcho, which is our topic, and we've dot underline eino over olav, indicating the result, namely that once blood is salted, it's no longer identified as Torah blood, and therefore one is not in violation if he eats it. For Rav Yehuda Didei, Omar, Rav Yehuda on his own, because in the second point was Rav Yehuda was quoting Ziri. The third point is Rav Yehuda is saying a halacha on his own, that's Didei, without quoting someone else. Omar, Evorim, Shitzolon, Vehelon, Ein Bohem, Mishum, L'Reach, Nichoach. This is, as we said before, not related to our sugya, but he indicates that animal limbs, sacrificial limbs, that are roasted before they are brought onto the Mizbeach, if one were to do that, he does not fulfill one of the sacrificial requirements, which is to produce a Reach Nichoach, literally translated would be a pleasant smell, the smell of roasted meat. Because it's the idea on a superficial level is that the pleasant smell of roasting meat is supposed to be produced on the Mizbeach. If you roasted it off the Mizbeach and then brought pre-roasted limbs to the Mizbeach, you are not accomplishing Reach Nichoach on the Mizbeach. Of course, the concern of Reach Nichoach is a much deeper idea that has to do with the realm of spirituality and sacrificial meaning, but that's not the purview of our discussion. Right now, we're dealing simply with procedure, and we're telling you that the Reach Nichoach is supposed to be produced on the top of the Mizbeach and not done beforehand, which is the halacha Rav Yehuda was just referring to in Gimel. But for our purposes, we're grappling with the following idea. Why would I need a Gzeres HaKosuv to exclude blood from the need for salting when that would be something obvious to me even without the scriptural reference? The Gemara answers, and you can see the geometric form is inverted, indicating an answer. Mahu detaimo, one without this teaching might have thought, mishdaba mashehu lemitzvah bi'alma, that put a little bit, mishda is to throw into it, into the blood, mashehu, a little bit of salt, to fulfill a commandment, to fulfill the idea of salting. With that mashehu, you would not obliterate the blood identity from the dam, and therefore I would in effect be fulfilling the concept of salting blood. So without the pasuk, I would have thought that's what I'm expected to do. As far as the halacha that we saw above, dam shemocha ino averolav, which was taught by Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Zeiri, that's true. If you put a lot of salt into it, that would obliterate the shame dam. But as far as the idea of salting something and it would still be called blood, that might have been accomplished by putting a little bit of salt into it, into the blood, thereby fulfilling the mitzvah of salting and it retaining the identity of blood. Kamash Malon, this is what the Gemara concludes with, that says that the scriptural reference above says that no salting whatsoever, even the mashu, is necessary. Gufa. Now the Gemara turns to the aforementioned halachas themselves. Here we're going to speak about dam shebishloi. We have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text indicating where this quote is coming from. So if you skim up a few lines, you can see where it is from. Gufa, Omar Ziri, Omar Rabbi Hanina, dam shebishloi eino over olav. Blood that's cooked, there is no violation. Yosef Rava v'ka'omar lo l'hoshmaitza. Rava was seated and said over this particular teaching. Abaye heard this, and Abaye raises an objection. What we are going to see now, by way of markings, we're going to see another back and forth discussion. In order to distinguish it from the previous back and forth discussion, we change the geometric form. In this case, we'll be using a triangle with the explanation on the side of the Gemara. You can see under our Mivneh heading, we have a triangle featured with the point facing up. This represents Kushios. And with the point facing down, this represents responses, Tshuvos. The question that appears now, Abaye raises, Eisve Abaye, a Tanaic source follows, and you see it says it's in a frame as we frame off all our Tanaic sources in the Gemara marking system. Hikpo es hadam v'ochlo. Hikpo has to do with causing something to congeal. Sometimes subjecting things to heat causes them to congeal. And that is the case with blood. Hikpo es adam v'ochlo, and after causing it to congeal, he ate it. Oi she himcho es hachelev, or he melted fats. Chelev is a substance found inside of animals and at different points in the body, and it is a highly forbidden substance. One must remove chelev from the animal. If one took the chelev and then melted it, the gum o, and drank the melted chelev, chayov. We've dashed underlined chayav, because this Tanaic source then would seem to contradict what Ziri Amar Bichanina says, where he said if the blood is cooked, one is not in violation. Here you have Hikpo es adam, and one is in violation. Loi kashya, the Gemara responds. You can see the inverted triangle would represent a response. Kan shehikpo be'ur, Kan shehikpo b'chamo. The teaching that one is not in violation, that's if he subjected it to ur. Ur is fire. In other words, boiled the blood and then ate it. That would not be in violation of the prohibition of consuming blood. The source that said one is chayav is if he caused it to congeal through sun heat, solar heat. In other words, putting it in the sun. The Gemara itself explains, Ba'ur, when blood is boiled up, lo hodar, it cannot go back to its original state, to its original liquid state. B'chamo, if it's been congealed in the sun, hodar, it can go back to its original state. Therefore, one would be chayav for consuming blood, even though it's currently congealed, but it's in a state that it could go back to being what it originally was. The Gemara asks, this question lasts a couple of lines. You can see we've included a long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. The Gemara asks, "B'chamo nami, even in the sun that you said one is chayav, lema, why not say, hoyo the idchi idchi, that once it's cast out, maybe once it's congealed, it's idchi, it's no longer capable of resulting in guilt." Rav Moni once asked of Rabbi Yochanan concerning blood that congealed, and we're assuming we're talking even about chulin blood, even non-sacrificial blood, and one had the congealed blood and ate it. Mahu, what is the din? Omar lay, and Rabbi Yochanan responded, "Hoyl v'nidche yidche, since it's been congealed, it's no longer under the prohibition of blood, and that's it. It's cast out. So once it's cast away from prohibition, why should we be concerned whatsoever of its potential of becoming liquidy again?" So the to this question that Abaye raises, Ishtik, Rava had no response. He remained silent. Omarle, so Abaye said back, Dilma, maybe you can say, Kan bechatois hachitzonios, Kan bechatois hapnimios. That there would be a chiyuv, and we wouldn't say hoyol v'idchi idchi, when you're discussing sin offerings that are brought in the courtyard of the Mizbech, external sin offerings. That which Ziri said, that dam shehikpa, dam shebishlo eino over olav, that is talking about chatos hapnimios. Those are sin offerings that are brought, whose blood is brought into the heichal. Upon hearing this, Omar Rava responded and said, "Ad karton milso di Omar Rabo Omar Rav Chisda." You just reminded me of a teaching said in the name of Rav Chisda. Before going on, we just encountered a new geometric form, a diamond, and we have this explained in the outside margin, the Mivneh, Shtei Deos, two opinions will be represented, Binyan Dam Hapnimios, regarding the blood of internal sin offerings, Shekorash, Dam Hapnimios Shekorash, Ichayav Olov Mishon Dam, if one is guilty for eating this blood. So, the first comment concerning the dam hapnimios, or let's say dam in general of korbanos, diama rab omar of chisda, dam shekorash, blood that became congealed. Bechatois hachitzonos, if you're talking about dam of the external sin offerings, the ochlo, and then one ate it. Chayov, one is guilty. The pasuk says, velokach venosan, omar rachmona. In describing the blood of chatois hachitzenis, the pasuk uses the expression he shall take, and then he shall place it. The high congealed blood bar likicha unesina hu, one can take it and place it. Therefore, the fact that it may be congealed, it does not lose its the descriptions that are appropriate for it. Bechatois hapnimios, with regard to internal sacrificial blood, the ochlo, we're talking once again about dam shekorash of chatois hapnimios the ochlo, he would be potter, exempt. Why? The posuk in describing the blood of chatois hapnimios says v'toval v'hiza omar rachmona, the kohen dips his finger into the blood and then sprinkles. The high congealed blood lav bar tevila v'hazohu, one cannot accomplish dipping and sprinkling with blood like that. Therefore, when we talk about congealed blood, if you're talking about the chatois hapnimios, one would not be guilty if he eats blood like that. the Rabba Didei Omar, Rabba on his own, as opposed to Rabba before who was quoting Rav Chisda, Rabba on his own says, Afilu b'chatois ha'pnimios v'ochlo chayov, that if you're dealing with the chatois ha'pnimios, we would not make the distinction that we said above. By the way, the above distinction was quite important for the sugya that we had been dealing with in trying to resolve the teaching that we saw in the name of Ziri and the Tanaic source that we saw above. And especially when we, let's be more accurate, we had seen a teaching above and we saw Rabbi Yochanan's response to Rav Moni's question. So in order to resolve, do we say Hoyo v'nidche yidche, yes or no? So we made a distinction some, when we do say it and when we don't say that. And that was, thanks to Rav Chisda's teaching, we were able to make that distinction between Chatois HaPnios and Chatois HaChitzonios. As far as the continuation of the Gemara, that distinction we will not be able to make. Rabba on his own says even Chatois HaPnimios, if one eats the Dam Shekorash of that, he is Chayav. Hoyol ukenegdo roi b'chatois hachitzonos. Since the equivalent of that, namely the congealed blood by Chatois HaChitzonios, would still have the Dam identity, therefore, when you're dealing with the blood of the Pnimios, one would also be guilty. Omar Rav Popo, Hilkoch, since we mentioned this idea of Hoyol ukenegdo, since it has an equivalent case that it would be forbidden, Dam Chamor Shekorash V'ochlo Chayov. The Chamor is an unkosher variety animal. It's a donkey. Donkey blood that congealed and one ate it would be guilty of consuming blood. Hoyol ukenegdo roi b'chatos hachitzonos. Since there is a situation where blood in that form retains its blood identity by virtue of the fact that one could fulfill the lokach v'nosan regarding it, and that's in the case of the chatos hachitzonos. So therefore, since other kinds of blood can be parallel to that in the sense that it can be viewed like the chatos hachitzonos, even if you're not dealing with a chatos hachitzoni, it too will generate guilt if one eats it. As you can see, we have a slash mark, which indicates that which follows is a new idea. We have a topic heading for the next discussion, although it's a very short piece of Gemara. It has significance in and of itself, therefore we assigned a separate topic heading to this. In the outside margin, you notice the nosei, dam, kechatzitzo le'inyan tevila. Dam, serving as an interposition with regard to halachas involving immersion in a mikveh. As one may know, when one immerses in a mikveh, he is supposed to have nothing on his body separating his body from the water of the mikveh. Omar Rav Gidol, Omar Ze'iri, Dam, Bein Lach, Bein Yovesh, Chotzeitz. Ze'iri teaches that blood, whether it be wet or dry, it forms a chatzitza. Meisvei, the Gemara raises an objection. The source teaches a number of substances, and we've dashed underlined that which is of immediate importance to our discussion. It says in this source, Hadam, blood, vadio, ink, vadvash, honey, vahacholov, and milk. Yaveshin chitzin, if they're dried, they will serve as an interposition. One has these substances on their skin and it's dried, it will be a chatzitza. Lachin, Einon chotzitzin, and we've emphasized with our markings this expression, if it's lach, if it's wet, it's not chotzeitz. This would seem to contradict Ze'iri's teaching that we saw just before. The Gemara answers, lo kashya. There is no contradiction. Ha de sorich, ha de lo sorich. Let us talk about dam that is not wet. If it's sorich, Rashi says, Shemaschil hisyabesh lidobe ktsas chotzeitz. It's wet, but it's starting to dry. So it's starting to dry. It's still, it will stick to the skin. That will be chotzeitz. avrahad lo sarech, if it's in a still wet state, it's at a point that if you were to immerse your finger in it, it would simply drip off. It would like a string of blood would form, so to speak, and draw away from your finger. It's still fairly liquidy. It's called lo sarech. In that state, it would not be chotzeitz. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new topic heading, the Nosei. The topic heading on the outside margin, we've entitled this Kamus, quantity, Kamus HaMelach, Deboinon LeMelichas Korban, the amount of salt that's required for salting of sacrifices. Before we learn the Gemara, let us glance at the inside margin. We've included a Pasuk, Vayikra, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Gimel. The pasuk reads as follows: V'chol korban minchascha b'melach timloch. All your meal offerings you shall salt. V'lo sash b'smelach b'risalekecha me'al minchascha. Don't cease the salt from being on your meal offerings. Al kol korban cha takriv melach. On all sacrifices you shall offer it with salt. Now the Gemara. Timlach, in effect, a quote from the Pasuk, Vayikra, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Gimel. The word Timlach is a part of a double expression. The Pasuk said, Bamelach Timlach. Lamai also. What is this second word coming to teach us? Le Chedesanya. It has the following role, and the point is found in the following Tanaic source that you can see is in a frame. Bamelach. The pasuk originally said v'chol korban minchascha b'melach yochol tivunehu. This word will be addressed later on as part of a vigorous back and forth discussion in which three opinions will be presented as to what tivunehu means. So for the meantime, we'll leave it obscure. So the pasuk says b'melach. Does that mean I should do tivunehu to it? Talmud lomar timlach. Timlach would suggest no. E timlach yochol b'mei melach. If it says timlach, does that mean I can use mei melach? Literally, it would be salt water. Could be salt. Rashi says it comes from Murias. Murias is a type of brine, if you will. So is that what one uses? Talmud lomar b'melach. No, don't use mei melach, use salt. V'lo sash bis melach. What does that teach me? Ha bo or hovei melach she'eino shovesis. Bring salt that is available throughout the year. V'ezo, and which is that? Zu melach zvoimis. That's a reference to salt that comes from the Dead Sea. The nature of that salt is that all year round the water is casting the salt upon its shores. So it's available year round. Uminayin shim lo motza melach stoimis shemevi melach is truknis. From where do I know that if you don't have the Dead Sea salt, you bring this kind of salt called istrukness? Rashi indicates it's mind salt that needs human intervention for its production. People have to mine it. There's another point that Rashi makes, that as opposed to melach stomish, which is a fine salt, istrukness is a coarse salt. So from where do I know that if you don't use melach stomish, use istrukness? Talmud lomar takriv. From the word takriv that's in the pasuk, we learn as follows. Takriv kol shehu, meaning any kind of salt. Takriv mikol makom, even if the salt comes from outside of Israel. Takriv vafilu b'shabbos, bring the salt even for Shabbos offerings, korbanos that are brought on Shabbos. As far as the significance of what is what is involved by way of Shabbos violation that I need to tell me do it anyway, we recommend looking into the Chidushei HaRashba that's found in the Sefer Asifas Zekenim on Seder Kochim. But for our purposes, we simply will mention that the word Takriv says you salt your sacrifices even on Shabbos, Takriv Vafilu Betuma, that if you're dealing with a public sacrifice, which are offered in a state of impurity, salting is done to it all the same. The Gemara asks, "My tivunehu?" In this source, we saw that expression. If one, let's say, lost track of where it came from, we've provided a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and you can find a parallel arrow opposite the last narrow line of the Gemara in which you will find this word. So what was meant by that? Before going on, notice in the outside margin, we have a structural note here, and this structural note features triangles that have colored in tips. This is, of course, to distinguish them from the triangles that we saw earlier, and they appear in two different directions, indicating that we have a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a back-and-forth discussion. So we've written on the side that with the point facing up, they represent hatsaos, suggestions, lefaresh my tivunehu. These represent suggestions as to what tivunehu might mean. And then you'll notice the triangles invert, and that indicates dechios, the rejections of those of each one of these, as each suggestion as it comes, it will be followed by an inverted triangle indicating that it's rejected. This will be true, of course, till we get to the final suggestion that we accept. So that having been said, we'll now get into trying to determine what is tivunehu. So the first suggestion, Omar Rabba Bar Ula, Hochi Komar, Yochol Yisavnenu Keteven Batit, should I put a lot of salt like the quantity of straw that one puts into producing cement? So that understanding that in the word tivunehu that was in the source has a potential word root to it, tes or tuf beis nun. Tuf beis nun, teven. Teven is straw. So the analogy is, should I put a lot of salt, so much, a great quantity of salt onto the korban like one would put straw into the making of tit? And then the source said no, you don't have to put that amount. The question right now is that in fact the meaning of the word at that early stage of the Braisa? So to this, Omar Le Abaye rejects this as a definition. Ihochi yitavnenu miboyele. Grammatically, it should have said yitavnenu. It doesn't say yitavnenu, which would have implied a straw analogy. Elom Abaye. So number two, Abaye's suggestion is yochol yasenu kebinyon. This too, by the way, implies a lot of salt, but based on a different root to the word. The word tivunehu has as its root, you would drop the tuf, as Rabba Bar Ula was understanding it, and accept as its root something else. The word boneh, the beis nun hey, would be the Hebrew root of bono, building. So the question, according to Abaye, the source, is saying that if I would have had the word bamelech, does that mean I put a lot of salt as one who puts up a structure, meaning row after row, or layer upon layer of salt, a lot of salt, layer upon layer. It may be pointed out that Abaye and Rabba Bar Ula aren't arguing necessarily in terms of intention or practical intention of the source. In both cases, the source was saying, should I put a large amount of salt? The question simply is, what is the analogy? So according to Rabba Bar Ulu, the analogy was to straw. According to Abaye, the analogy is to a building. Amar Le Rava. Rava doesn't like Abaye's word analysis. Ihachi, if that was the real intention of the source, Yivnenu Miboyale. The Brisa would have said, Yochol Yivnenu. Yivnenu is a more appropriate verb form to indicate a building. Ela Omar Rova. Yochol Tevunehu. Oh, that seems to be the same word. My Tevunehu. What do you mean by that? Omar Rav Ashi. Yochol Yitebo Ta'am Kebina. This, interestingly enough, is an approach that on a practical level is the opposite of Rabba Bar Ulo's and Abaye's approach. Here, the source is suggesting, by the word bamelach, should I put in just a pinch of salt, a very small amount. This pshat is courtesy of that which you find in the inside margin brought by the Oruch, who has a different girsa, tevuna, but it's the same idea, klomar, kol duhu melach, he writes, ad kidei lohavin sheish bo ta melach. Just a small enough amount of salt that you taste. You can taste there's a salt. Salt was added, but not more than that. So according to Rava's approach with Ravashi's explanation, the source was starting off by saying, had the Torah said just bamelach, does that mean I should put in just a pinch of salt? So to that, the source responds, Talmud Lomar Timlach. Timlach means more, put in more. Ketzad hu oseh, so how procedurally should one act? Mevi ho'ever, he brings the sacrificial limb. V'nosein olav melach, he puts a coating of salt on it. V'chozer v'hovcho, he flips over the limb. V'nosein olav melach, and then puts another coating of salt on the underside of the limb as well. U'ma'aleu, and then brings it onto the fire in that way. Omar Abaye v'chein likdeira. There's another girsa over here that Tosfos quotes that says v'chein litzli. On a practical halacha lemaisa level, there may be a very big difference or practical ramification in these two versions. But for our purposes, since we do not deal with applied halacha in the context of our shiurim, suffice it to say that Abaye is telling us that similar to the way you salt sacrificial limbs, so too one is to salt meat for common eating. Kedera means cooking up for your personal use at home. As everyone knows, meat, even though it has been slaughtered properly and it's from a kosher variety animal, still there's an additional process that's necessary before one is allowed to eat the cooked meat. One has to salt the meat. How much salting is necessary? So Abaye says, the same way that one prepares the meat for offering on the altar, so too one at home would salt the meat before he cooks it up. Tanu Rabbanan. The Gemara at the top of Omid Beis introduces a brisa, and we have a topic heading that accompanies this on the outside margin, Hano'o Mimelach Shabes Hamigdosh. The general topic, which will keep the Gemara occupied for quite a while, has to do with benefiting from salt that is in the Beis Hamigdosh. Benefiting, we'll see how to apply that as we go along in the Gemara. So the source opens up, melach, and we break this down into aleph and beis. So melach she'al gabi ho'ever, the salt that's on the sacrificial limb, and we're talking now, you have a limb of a sacrifice that is going to be put into, it's about to be put into the fire. Before it's put into the fire, it has been salted. If one, let us say he attempts to benefit on a personal level from that salt, mo'alin bo. He will be guilty of the prohibition of me'ila. Me'ila is a Torah prohibition from benefiting on a personal level from sanctified items, and if one does benefit, one is in violation of me'ila, he will then have to bring a special atonement sacrifice. However, she'al gabi hakevesh v'shebaroshay shel mizbeach, if one benefits from salt that fell off from limbs of sacrifices that was on the ramp leading up to the top of the mizbeach, that's the kevesh, or he benefits from salt that fell off of limbs that's found at the top of the mizbeach, ein moadin. It's important for us to note that this idea of salt having fallen off is explained in the Rashi. So if one benefits from fallen off salt, whether it be found on the ramp or the top of the mizbeach, there is no me'ilah violation. Ein mo'alin bo. That salt is really no longer fit for any use. Therefore, there's no me'ilah. The Omar Rav Matana, my craw, what pasuk is there that indicates that salt on a limb is considered as part of the sacrifice itself, and therefore there will be a me'ilah violation? So the Gemara cites a pasuk from Yecheskel, v'ikravtom lifnei Hashem v'hishlichu hakonim aleim melach. You notice the reference here to salt. Salt is placed on the limbs. Ve'elu osam ola l'Hashem. And they are then offered up as an ola sacrifice to God. So that what is referred to, or what's included in the term ola? The salt is included in the term ola. Therefore, if one benefits from the salt, he is considered benefiting from an ola, and therefore in violation of mi'ilah. Before going further, we have a topic heading in the outside margin. Tanai Beis Din, who there is a legal stipulation, Shiyu HaKohanim Mekablim Melach V'Eitzim Mishel Tzibor, that the Kohanim are to receive salt and wood from the public supply of salt and wood, the Beis HaMikdash public supply. So, in simple terms, we're saying as follows. Somehow, the Kohanim are not automatically included in the allowance, if you will, to benefit from the salt and wood of the Beis HaMikdash supplies, if not for this special allowance we call a Tanai Beis Din. The Gemara opens up with a quote from a Mishnah in Masechet Shkolim. The Mishnah there is more elaborate than the quote we see over here. There's a reference to seven things were part of a Tanai Beis Din that the Kohanim should be entitled to benefit from as well. Here, two items are mentioned. Al HaMelach V'Al HaEitzim Shiyu HaKohanim Ne'usin Bohem. The word Ne'usin, you can see, has a similar root to it as hano'o, benefit. So that there is a special court stipulation or legal stipulation that the Kohanim also are allowed to benefit from the salt and wood of the Beis HaMikdash. Omar Shmuel. Shmuel comes to qualify this source or explain the source. Loi shanu ella lekorbonon. The fact that the source says they are allowed to benefit from the salt, to what extent are they allowed to benefit? For what purposes are they allowed to use the salt? So Shmuel teaches that this allowance is as far as the salting that's required for offering a sacrifice on the fire. This is, of course, the sugya that we were dealing with just before, the need for sacrificial salting, avol la'achilo loy, but salting to make the food taste better. And here we're talking, of course, about the eating of korbanos. We're not talking about necessarily taking the salt from the Beis HaMikdash home and putting on your hamburger, but we're talking about for the eating of sacrifices. After all, after the blood is sprinkled, in the case of most sacrifices, one is entitled to eat the remaining meat. And nevertheless, even though one wants to have his meat tasty and does that and accomplishes that by adding salt to it, he is not allowed to use the Beis HaMikdash salt supply for his sacrificial eating pleasure. Before going on, it's important for us to mention that the pshat we gave just now is based on the initial understanding of the Gemara. However, as we go on in the Gemara, we're going to have to allow for some flexibility of understanding. So, as is always in the case of sugyas of Gemara, one will gain greater clarity as he goes on. Before going on in this sugya, however, we have a new geometric form with regard to this particular sugya. We have a diamond, and this is explained in the outside margin, the mivneh. Under the mivneh heading, you see a diamond featured, shlavim. They represent stages, behesber divrei Shmuel, in trying to understand what Shmuel said. Shmuel made 2 points, or a qualification. He said that benefit is allowed with regard to korbanam, but not with regard to achila. In our oral explanation, we already assigned guidelines for understanding korbanom and achila. However, the Gemara itself has to engage in that, and you may find that the Gemara eventually changes the pshat that we suggested. So the Gemara in its first stage, you notice there is a diamond here on Salka Daitoch. If you skim down a number of lines, also at the beginning of a line, but further down the page, you will encounter a second diamond, which represents the second stage of understanding. So, the first stage, my lekorbanon, what is meant by lekorbanon that Shmuel said that for korbanon, niosin, they're allowed to benefit? Lemloach korbanon, salting the sacrificial limbs, like we explained. Now, leachila, Shmuel said that leachila loi, that for achila, no benefit. What does that mean? La'achilas kachim, for the eating, for the kohen, for the personal eating, or I should say the kohen eating of the sacrificial limbs. Let's say in more general terms, for the eating of sacrifices. Salting, using salt from the public Beis HaMikdash supply would not be allowed. The Gemara now is going to bring this into question. You can see we have a long question marking that accompanies this piece of Gemara to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You'll notice a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. In addition to that marking, we also have a bracket that accompanies most of this question. You'll notice the bracket length indicator by the bracket length marker to the immediate left-hand side of Gemara text. You see a dash dotted vertical line. You'll notice that in the Gemara text itself there are brackets at the beginning and end of this mark. The reason for these brackets is that up till the brackets, which is essentially just 2 lines of Gemara, we will in effect be able to ask the basic question. The Iker question will be presented. Within the brackets is simply background information for this question. But realizing that, it makes the reading much easier. So the Gemara, after presenting what we thought the understanding of Shmuel is, to this the Gemara asks a question. Hashta limloyach oirois kachim yahavinan. We give the Kohanim salt from the Beis HaMikdash salt supply, even for the salting of skins, which is part of the tanning process. Skins of Korbanos is one of the items in the case of a Korban Ola, for example, whose limbs are entirely offered on the Mizbeach. The skin, though, is not. The skin is given to the Kohanim. The Kohanim are allowed to take, and in order, of course, to preserve skins, it has to go through a preservation process, included in which is a salting stage. So, mind you, for the salting of skins, the Kohanim are allowed to benefit from the salt of the Beis HaMikdash. Le'achilas kodshim lo yahavinon. Would you think that we do not give them the salt for the eating of sacrifices? If anything, the eating of sacrifices is a more significant action or process than simply salting the skins of sacrifices. So how could you possibly suggest that in light of the fact that they are allowed to receive salt for the leather of sacrifices, for the skins of sacrifices, all the more so they will be allowed to receive salt for the eating of the sacrifices. If we skip the bracketed section, the Gemara then presents a second approach. Let's skip it momentarily. You see the diamond, the next diamond, Elomai le korbanon. What is meant by korbanon that Shmuel said that they are allowed to benefit from the salt? That, in fact, is l'achilas korbanon, for their korban eating. My l'achila, what is meant by l'achila, that it's forbidden to receive the Beis HaMikdash public salt supply? That's achila dechulin. That's for their non-sacrificial eating, for personal eating purposes. That, of course, will then become the discussion of the Gemara that follows, but before we get to that, let's go back over the bracketed section. At this point, then, let's go over the point. We had seen a suggested understanding of what Shmuel said in the diamond. The Gemara then challenges that. It can't possibly be that there is a prohibition of benefiting from Beis HaMikdash salt for Achilas Kachim. After we establish that they get the, they're allowed to benefit from the salt for the skins of sacrifices, the Sanya. Now we have a Tanaic source that provides the background for this information. And by the way, as is characteristic in our Gemara markings, we like to emphasize the main point of the Brisa. And you could, if you skim ahead, you'll notice a dashed underline here in this source, which is the main point, the reason for this Brisa being brought in, where you see the expression that says Shesham Molchen Oreis Kachim. It's sufficient to see that you see that the Beis HaMikdash salt supply is used for the salting of skins of sacrifices. So we start the source. Desanya nimtzei sata oimer b'shloisha mekoymeis hamelech nesuna. There are three locations in which salt is found in the Beis HaMikdash, and they are listed and then explained. One, belishkas hamelech. Two, v'algabi hakevesh. Three, uvaroshe shel mizbeach. Number one is it. Now we go over and explain each one. As you can see, each one is underlined and numbered again. Belishkas hamelech, the salt office. Shesham molchen oros kachim. In that lishka, in that chamber, the salt chamber, is a place that the sacrificial skins were salted. Al gabi hakevesh, on the ramp, there was a salt supply on the ramp of the mizbeach leading up to the top. Shesham molchen es ho'evorem. There, the limbs were salted on their way up to the top where they would be put into the fire. And Beroshei Shem Mizbeach, there was a salt pile or a salt supply on the top of the Mizbeach. Shesham Molchin HaKoimetz V'Alavoyno V'Akteres U'Minchas Koyhanim U'Minchas Koyin Moshiach U'Minchas Nesochim V'Oilas Ha'oif. Each one of these items was salted at once they reached the top of the Mizbeach. Now, in the source we saw, salt of the Beis HaMikdash was used for the salting of sacrificial skins. If that be the case, then salt of the Beis HaMikdash, the public salt supply in the Beis HaMikdash, was certainly going to be provided for the eating of sacrificial meat. Well, elamai lekorbanon, then what is meant by korbanon that Shmuel had mentioned above, one is allowed to benefit? That is a reference to l'achilas korbanon, for the eating of sacrificial meat. Umay l'achila, and when Shmuel said that for achila one is not allowed to benefit from the Beis HaMikdash salt supply, what is referred to there? Achila dechulin, the eating of mundane food matters. The Gemara asks, chulin pshita my bo hasam. As far as salting chulin is concerned, it's obvious that you're not going to use Beis HaMikdash salt for that. After all, what's chulin doing in the first place in the Beis HaMikdash? There's a prohibition referred to as chulin ba'azara, which is a general idea, or we should say in general, the idea being that one does not bring in anything that's not of a holy or sanctified nature. So of course you're not going to use the Beis HaMikdash salt for chulin when chulin isn't present there in the first place. The Gemara answers that the idea of salting chulin with Beis HaMikdash salt as a hava, I mean, as a thought, which of course we are rejecting, but the thought to do it is a reasonable basis for thinking that. Of course, we're telling you in the final picture, don't do it. But what is the hava amina, a basis for thinking such a thing? So before we read the Gemara, let us explain. When one eats sacrifices, there is this idea that one should not eat them in a state of hunger or in a ravenous fashion. Let's say that there's a korban and that there are a lot of people around that will be partaking of the korban. How much korban material, how much meat or how much meal offering will each person receive? Well, if we said there are a lot of people that are joining together to eat a particular korban, so each person will get a very small amount. Let us say that that's all they're going to be eating. So they're going to be eating that piece or that portion in a ravenous fashion. We don't want that to take place. How would one solve such a problem? Well, the answer to that is we would suggest that before going into the Azora to partake of the sacrificial meat, one should eat other food, eat chulin. So before going into the Beis HaMikdash, one would eat chulin, but that particular eating is really an eating that's for the benefit or associated with the sacrificial meal afterwards. So since this chulin consumption is sacrificial related, one might think that I could use Beis HaMikdash salt for making this chulin food tastier. So to that, Shmuel is explaining that la'achilo lo, one should not use Beis HaMikdash salt for this chulin food consumption, even though it is sacrificial related. Now let's see that in the text. This is now an answer. The question had been, well, it seems to be obvious that you're not going to use Beis HaMikdash salt for chulin. Why does that need to be taught? The Gemara answers, Afagav di omamar, even though it's taught, yochlu. This is based on a pasuk in Vayikra, Perek Vav pasuk tes, which is quoted on the inside margin of our marked Gemaras. We've written in, V'hanoiseres mimeno yochlu aharon uvonov, matzos teochel b'mokom kodosh b'chatzar ol moed yochlua. So the word yochlu comes from that pasuk, and we learn from that shiyochlu imo chulinu truma, that when eating of sacrificial material, in this case the pasuk was talking about the meal offerings, the pasuk is saying eat together with it or prior to it chulin and truma. We've dashed underlined chulin because that's the main word for our immediate discussion. And the pasuk is telling us he should eat chulin and truma kadesh te necheles al hasova, so that when it comes to eating the mincha itself, one is eating that when he's already more or less satisfied already. So there is Torah significance to this chulin consumption. Afilu hachi, even so, melach de kotshin lo yavina lehu. We don't give the sanctified salt from the Beis HaMikdash salt supply for this particular chulin eating. Omar le Ravina le Ravashi, hachi nami mistavra. Ravina points out that this approach is in fact most likely. De'i salka daitoch mai le korbonon limloyach. If one were to think that the lekorbanon means for the salting, like we originally thought. And by the way, we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. This is to draw your attention to where this original supposition appeared. That was where the Sakadaitach opened up this discussion. So what Ravina is saying, that it's most likely not to accept that original approach. We've dashed underlined the expression hochi nami mistavra, and this has significance for the upcoming Gemara. Later in the Gemara, this will be challenged. Ravina right now is saying it's quite obvious not to accept that original approach. Later in the Gemara, there will be a presentation that says that in fact that original approach was very logical, of course based on a new opinion that we haven't seen yet. So let's go on in the Gemara in the meantime, following Ravina's train of thought, suggesting that the first stage is quite logically rejected. Because if one were to think that, you'll come out with something, we'll call it absurd. If you were to think, like the original suggestion, that benefit is allowed only for salting the limbs, that the Kohanim are entitled to receive the salt for the salting of sacrificial limbs. Taimo de asni beistin. So the whole reason that they're allowed is because of the legal allowance, the Tanai Beisdin, that was referred to in the Mishnah in Shkolim that opened up this sukya. Ho, lo, asni, Beisdin, loi. And if there would not have been this legal allowance, would you have thought Kohanim are not allowed to use the Beis HaMikdash for the Beis HaMikdash salt supply for their sacrificial salting? Hashtu v'Yisraeli avinon. We know that the non-Kohanim, the Yisrael is the Zorim, will say, the general Jewish population, they, we know, do receive the salt for their sacrificial salting. So if they're allowed to, would you have thought that the Kohanim are not allowed? Notice we have a bracketed section. These brackets are beneficial if one were to skip them, because at this point the basic question, or the basic point, it's not really a question, it's a point that's been raised. The point being that once we know that Yisrael receives salt for their from the public salt supply for their sacrificial salting, Kohanim certainly would receive it. Right after the brackets, the Gemara will say, it's not so obvious. It may be true that Yisrael does receive it, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Kohanim would not receive, if not for the Tanai Beisdin. So in effect, I do need the Tanai Beisdin for allowing Kohanim to use the Beis HaMikdash salt for salting sacrificial limbs. You may ask, why would you have thought such a thing? Why would you have thought that Yisrael receives and Kohanim do not receive, if not for the Tanai Beisdin? To that, the Gemara will answer on the second wide line, I need the Tanai Beisdin, without which the Kohanim would not have received the salt, according to Ben Bukhri. This is what you'll see on the second wide line of the Gemara. And we will explain ahead of time, according to Ben Bukhri, Kohanim were not expected to contribute money for the purpose of public sacrificial costs. Now, if Kohanim were not contributing to public sacrifices or public sacrificial needs, then the salt supply is not something they were paying for. So I might have thought, if you pay, you get. If you don't pay, you don't get. Yisrael, who paid for it, they get rights to the public salt. Kohanim, who were not expected to pay, don't get rights to the public salt supply. Therefore, maybe the Kohanim don't have a right to use the salt whatsoever, even for the salting of sacrificial limbs. Therefore, I need the Tanai Beisdin to teach me that very basic allowance, so that the original Salka Daitoch has a real basis, of course, within Ben Bukhri. And for the Gemara to say, Hochi Nami Mistabra, where we had dashed, underlined that expression, where Ravina, you'll notice in the middle of the page, we had underlined Ravina's name, and Ravina came in saying it's quite obvious that Le Korbanon does not mean for the salting of the limbs. To this we say, it's not so obvious. We will now go over the Gemara within the text hoping that this general overview will hold us in good stead. Let's go backtrack a few lines to get into the flow and the proper flow of Gemara reading from Ravina. Amar lei Ravina la Ravashi. Hachi nami mistabra. It's most likely like the second diamond approach that was taken by the Gemara in explaining that le korbonen meant for achilas korbonon. If one were to think like the first diamond approach, my le korbonon limloach, that the kohanim are allowed to benefit from the salt supply for the salting of their sacrificial limbs, and that they're allowed to by virtue of a special legal allowance, taimo di asni beizdin. And so, according to the first approach, why would they be allowed to use the salt for salting sacrificial limbs? Because of a special legal provision. That's called a tanai beizdin. Ha lo asni beizdin lo. And if there wouldn't be a special legal provision, they would not. We know that Yisrael is allowed to receive the salt from the public salt supply. Would you think that Kohanim are not? Disanya. And now, in this long bracketed section, we will see the source for the fact that Yisrael receives salt from the public salt supply, from the public base of Yisrael salt supply for sacrificial limb purposes. The length of the bracketed section is indicated by the dashed, dotted, vertical line you see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, which takes you to the first wide line of Gemara. This is all background information. Desanya. Yochel ha'omer. Could it be that one who says, Hare olai mincha? Before we go on, let us take note of our topic heading that we have in the outside margin. The nosei, and we've indicated the socha sograyim that is within the bracketed section, Hochacha, proof, the melach, the salt, letzorich korbonos Yisrael, that's needed for Yisrael korbonos ba, Michel Tzibor, comes from the public Beis HaMikdash salt supply, and he doesn't have to bring it from home. So the source begins, Yochol oimer harei olai mincha yovi melach mitoch beisel, derech shemevi levona mitoch beisel. Could it be that one who accepts upon himself a mincha obligation, that he should bring salt from his house like he brings the lavona from his house? Now, lavona is a spice that accompanies meal offerings. Where does one get the lavona? He brings that from his personal supply, not from the Beis HaMikdash. So, is the salt to be brought from a personal supply just like the lavona? The din who? And logic would suggest as follows. Ne'emar hevi mincha vehevi melach. Ve'ne'emar hevi mincha vehevi levona. We see the Torah refers to bringing a mincha together with you bring salt. You bring a mincha and together with it you bring levona. Ma levona mitoch beso af melach mitoch beso. Just like the levona comes from your home supply, so too the salt may come from the home supply. Oiklach lederech zu, or go in this direction. Ne'emar hevi mincha vehevi melach, ve'ne'emar hevi mincha vehevi eitzim. You are one who brings a mincha brings salt, and one who brings a mincha also brings wood. Ma eitzim mishel tzibor, just like the wood comes from the public supply. This will be proven later on in the Gemara, Rashi mentions. But for the time being, we're just going to use this as an assumption. Just like the wood is known to come from the public supply, af melach mishel tzibor, so too the salt shall come from the public supply. So you can see that we're left in two different directions. The first one was melach mitoch beso. According to that, was by virtue of comparing melach to lavona. If, however, you compare the melach to the wood, you'll come mishel tzibor. Therefore, nira lemidome. Let's see to what the salt is most closely similar to. Donin And this too, by the way, will have two approaches. As you can see, if you just skip down a couple lines, you'll see once again we've scribbled underline O Klach L'Derech Zu. So in our attempt to find what is salt most similar to, let's see where we go. Donin Dover Hanoyeg B'chol Hazvochim, Midover Hanoyeg B'chol Hazvochim. Should I compare salt, which is characteristic of all korbanos, and learn it Midover from wood, which is characteristic, it accompanies all sacrifices? The Al Tochiach Levona Sheino Noheges El B'chol Hazvochim, and I will not allow Levona to prove what we are looking for, because Levona is something that is characteristic only of meal offerings and not of all sacrifices. Oy Klach L'Derech Zu, or maybe go in this direction. Once again, my unknown is salt. Donin Davar Habo Imo B'Kli Echad. Maybe I should derive salt from salt which comes together with the meal offering in the same vessel. Mi davar habo imo mi bekli echad. I'll derive salt from Levona, the way we treat, just like Levona is something that comes together with the meal offering in the same vessel, as does the salt. So just like the Levona comes from your personal supply, so too the salt should come from the from one's personal supply. V'al yochichu etzim she'enon boyin imo b'kli echad, and not allow wood to settle the issue. After all, the wood does not come together with the meal offering in one vessel, in the same vessel. So if you work on this logical comparison, I'm not going to get anywhere either, because according to the first approach, I'm looking at something that's common to all sacrifices, and that would be wood, so let wood prove salt. According to this last approach, I'm looking for something that comes together with the meal offering in the same vessel, just like the salt, and then I would learn from the Levona, which would say, bring the salt from your personal supply. Therefore, in order to solve the unknown, we have to rely on a scriptural source. Talmud Lomar, Bris Melach Oilam Hu. That's one pasuk. This pasuk is found in the case of the Lechem Haponim. Ulahalon Hu Oimer, Me'eis B'nei Yisrael Bris Oilam. This pasuk is of a public nature. It says, Me'eis B'nei Yisrael. And it mentions the word Bris. Bris was mentioned in the pasuk just before with regard to salt. And in this pasuk, which is referring to public source, it also mentions the word bris. We can therefore associate that bris with salt. Ma lahalon mishel tzibor, just like the last pasuk, which said me'eis b'nei Israel, is of a public nature. Af kan, so too the pasuk that refers to salt mishel tzibor, salt therefore coming from a public supply. So in this source, which was enclosed in this bracketed section, we've established that Yisrael receives salt for their korbanos from the public supply. And we are saying that if Yisrael, who was more distant from the Beis HaMikdash, so to speak, than the Kehanim, so if Yisraelim receive salt for their sacrificial purposes, would Kohanim not? It's obviously they would. Therefore, you wouldn't need a Tanai Bezdin to ensure the Kohanim as receiving salt for their sacrificial salting purposes. Omar le Rav Mordechi le Rav Ashi, Hochi ko'omar Rav Shisha brei de Rav Idi. Loi nitzricha elo leben buchri. So Rav Mordechi quotes Rav Shisha and says, you want to know something? You really do need a Tanai Bezdin to enable the Kohanim to receive salt for their sacrificial purposes. Namely, without the Tanai Bezdin, I would in fact have thought that the Kohanim do not receive salt for their korbanos. And if you'll ask, what, are the Kohanim on, are they on some lower level? We will say yes. And that's according to Ben Buchri. Once again, we have a bracketed section, which will, if you skip it, it will make the reading much, much easier. The point was just made that I in fact need a, if I accept Ben Buchri, I will then understand why the Kohanim are on a lower level, And without the Tanai Beis Din, they would not be entitled to the salt for their sacrificial purposes. According to Ben Bukhri, we mentioned before and we'll mention it again, Kohanim were not expected to contribute money to public sacrifices, and we'll explain that later. Therefore, skipping the bracketed section, that takes you to the bottom line. You can see the bracket length indicator to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, the vertical dash dotted line. So we now read at the end, Salka Daita Chamina. According to Ben Bukhri, I would have thought, Ki Zochi Lehu Rachmona, when the Torah gives permission for the use of Beis HaMikdash salt, Le Yisrael. That is true with regard to Yisrael, the Is Lehu Lishka. That means they've paid money, they've paid shkolim to the Lishka, to the chamber that contains the salt. In other words, the salt was purchased from monies contributed to the Beis HaMikdash for public sacrificial purposes. Who contributed to that fund? Yisraelim. L'kohanim deles lehu lishka, the kohanim who don't have a share in that public salt supply, being that they, the kohanim, according to Ben Bukhri, are not expected to contribute to public sacrificial funds. Lo zochi lehu rachmona, the Torah does not grant them an automatic right or share in that salt. Komash Malon, and therefore I would need the Tanai Beis Din to entitle them to a share in that salt supply. Therefore, the original suggestion of the Tanai Beis Din allowing the Kohanim to benefit from the salt supply, Shmuel said, Lo Shanu Ela LeKorbanan. That they're allowed to benefit, that's for the salting of their sacrificial limbs. And you'll ask, what in the world do I need a Tanai Beis Din to entitle the Kohanim to benefit from the salt? The answer is, according to Ben Bukhri, in fact, I need the special legal provision for their right to benefit. Now, we'll go over the Gemara with the bracketed section included. But before we get into it, let us say a few more words of background. This Ben Bukhri approach seems to be very unconventional, to put it mildly. What do you mean the Kohanim don't contribute to public sacrifices? So by way of background, for understanding Ben Bukhri, let us first of all note, a Kohen Mincha, a Kohen meal offering. The term meal offering includes many more items than just the simple personal korban mincha that one brings. Included in the realm of minochas are things like the lechem haponim, and the shtei halechem of shvuas, and the korban omer. The rule concerning a mincha of a kohen is that it is completely burnt. One is not allowed to eat from a mincha of a kohen. Let us imagine that the kohanim would contribute to the public sacrifice fund. The monies that the kohanim contribute, part of those monies would go to the purchase of the lechem aponim. If the money used for the lechem aponim in fact came from kohanim, that would then mean that the lechem aponim would be expected to be burnt, which is of course not the way to deal with it. You're not allowed to burn the lechem aponim. That's supposed to be distributed every Shabbos to the kohanim. And the same thing with regard to the shtei lechem, that's supposed to be eaten. So, but if you had a situation where the kohanim are contributing to the public sacrificial funds, and from those funds you are in fact buying omer and shtei lechem and lechem aponim, there is room to think that they should be burnt. Therefore, Ben Bukhri mentions, best thing, lechatchila kohanim, should not contribute to the public sacrificial fund, thereby ensuring that all the monies that are going to the purchase of these items is not from a Kohen source, and therefore it's not to be burnt, which is exactly what we are trying to accomplish. Ben Buchri, of course, is challenged by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that we will see in this source. After that has been said, though, let's just go over the main point for our sugya. As you can see, you see that Ben Buchri is not such a wild idea as one might have originally thought. So according to this approach, that Kohanim are not contributing to the public sacrificial funds, the salt as well is not something they have paid for. So when it comes to benefiting from it, maybe they are not allowed to benefit from something they didn't pay for. Therefore, according to Ben Buchri, I would, in fact, need a t'nai based in a special legal provision to entitle the Kohanim to receive a portion of the public salt for their sacrificial purposes. In other words, they're not getting it by virtue of basic rights, but rather by virtue of a special t'nai based in. Let's now read this in the Gemara. We mentioned that I will, let's say, resurrect the original Seifka Daichatoch, that original diamond, which, by the way, is a repudiation of the Hochi Nami Mistabra that Ravina had mentioned halfway down the Gemara, which we had dashed underlined. In other words, Ravina was trying to say that the second diamond approach is most likely, the first approach being bordering on the absurd. To this, the Gemara says, and let's read now the Gemara from the first wide line in the middle. Omar Leir of Mordechai Rav Ashi, Hochi Komar of Shisha Breder of Idi, Lo Nitzrucha Elo Leben Buchri, which means, in fact, I do need a Tanai based in to entitle the Kohanim to benefit from the salt for their salting of sacrificial limbs based on Ben Buchri, Disnan. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Hayid Ben Buchri Biyavne, Ben Buchri testified in the city of Yavne, called Kohen Sheshoikel, any Kohen who contributes shkolim to the public sacrificial funds, eino chote, he's not considered a sinner. It's okay, so to speak. However, lechatchila, bottom line though, he's not chayav, he's not obligated. Omar lo Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, lo ki. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees and says, lo ki, not so. Elo kol kohen sheino shokel chote. Any kohen who does not contribute is a sinner. In other words, a kohen has to contribute to the public sacrificial funds. So why would one have thought otherwise? Elo shah kohanim dorshim mikro zeli atzmon. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai says that the kohanim darshan, they expound on a pasuk for their own benefit. Which pasuk? The pasuk says, "V'chol minchas kohen kolil tiyeh lo se'ochel." A kohen, a personal meal offering brought by a kohen, is completely burnt and not to be eaten. Hoyil v'oimer u'shtei alechem v'lechem aponim shelanu. Since the omer and the shtei alechem, the two loaves that are brought on Shavuos, and the lechem aponim, are ours, meaning since we have contributed to them, then shalonuhi heich necholim, how could they be eaten? Therefore, they try to darshan. This is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says they try to explain. Therefore, we shouldn't contribute, or therefore it's best we don't have to contribute to the public funds, because if we do, it will then cause these public sacrifices, the omer shelechem and lechem aponim, to be burnt. Like a Kohen meal offering is to be burnt. However, Ben Buchri really felt that that is a consideration. Therefore, the Kohanim aren't expected to be contributors to the public fund, the public sacrificial fund. At this point in the Gemara, there's a detailed question. The Gemara asks regarding Ben Buchri. Ben Buchri, kiva de lechatchila lo mechayev lesuye. According to Ben Buchri, since the Kohanim are not really expected to bring these monies to the chamber of the Beis Hamikdash in which the monies were collected, ki maisi nami, when in fact they do bring, because Ben Bukhari mentioned that if they bring, they're not considered sinners. But one second, if they're not expected to bring, ki maisi nami, when they do bring, chotehu dekomayo chulun lazora. In fact, they are sinners. They are bringing in mundane funds to the Azorah. Chulin, which is something that's not Kodesh, since they're not expected to bring it, so then it would not appear to be of a sanctified nature. If you're expected to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, so it's sanctified for the Beis HaMikdash. If it's not expected to be brought, so then you're in effect bringing in simple personal funds to the Beis HaMikdash. That's called chulin, the mundane, into the Azorah, which is something that one is not allowed to do. The Gemara answers, that's not a problem in and of itself. They bring that which is not really expected of them. However, the Maisi, they bring it. Umosa lahoin letzibur. They give it over. They donate it with a full heart to the public. So they are parting with their personal funds to the benefit of the public, thereby instilling in the funds a holy nature, and it's not called chulin anymore. At this point, the brackets ends because this salka daitoch is a throwback to that which appeared at the lo nitzrucha, the second wide line of the Gemara. By the way, the bottom Rashi gives a lot of support to our marking system. Notice, Rashi there has a purely structural note. He says, Salka Daitoch v'chulei v'hashto meforesh. At this point in the Salka Daitoch, the last line of the Gemara where we're going to read Salka Daitoch, Rashi says, now it's going to explain the lo nitzrucha b'liel. Now that lo nitzrucha expression was found on the second wide line of the Gemara. So with our brackets, we in effect are enabling you to see how this Salka Daitoch is a throwback to the lo nitzrucha that was mentioned there. Rav Shisha was telling us there that the Tanai Beis Din is needed for Ben Bukhri's approach. Now we read Salka Daitoch Amina, that without the teaching that there's a Tanai Beis Din, without the Mishnah in Shkolim that teaches with Shmuel's original explanation that there's a Tanai Beis Din allowing the Kohanim to use public salt for their sacrificial limbs, I would have thought, without the original teaching, I would have thought, ki zachi lehu rachmona, when the Torah grants rights to the salt use, li Yisrael, to is lehu lishka, that is with regard to Yisrael, to the non-Kohanim who have to contribute funds to the salt chamber that contains the Beis HaMikdash salt supply. The Kohanim de les lehu lishka, however, with regard to the Kohanim that aren't expected to contribute funds, they therefore don't get a share in the Beis HaMikdash public salt supply. Lo zochi lehu rachmona. Therefore, based on basic merit, they don't have a share in that salt. Komash molon. Therefore, I need the Tanai Beis Din to entitle them to the basic use of the salt for the salting of sacrificial limbs. And with that, we thereby understand that the original Salka Daitoch was a very reasonable thought to have, of course, if you adopt the Ben Bukhri approach to things. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.